You, we are the salt of the earth. On a cold yet bright February Sunday, I find myself in a mood for good bread breaking. Bread to bake and to allow the aroma of the warm bread baking in the oven to filter the house. Doesn't that make you feel warm? Especially my specialty, Irish soda bread. Now, I'm not claiming that my Irish soda bread, or scone as the Irish call it, is as good as my Irish mother's, but it generally is not too bad. Some years ago, I tried my recipe out on some friends. And would you believe, one of my friends nominated me to be a judge of Irish soda bread baking competition in Baltimore at a place called Finnerty's, as in Finnerty. The event was a Catholic fundraiser for an Irish religious community of sisters, and it happened just a few days before St. Patrick's Day. So I showed up with an Irish sweater straight from my Aunt Teresa's Irish knit and woolen shop and a bright green Tam O'Shanter. I was ready for fun. And of course, I had an empty stomach. I was ready to taste and enjoy the Finnerty's. But upon arriving, I was surprised that my fellow judges were serious about the context. One, a food critic for the Baltimore Sun, soon instructed this naive bread baker on how to taste for the best bread. A good Irish soda bread, he said, should have a bright brown with a light crust on the outside, a soft, fluffy texture on the inside, just the right balance of baking soda and baking powder, and watch out for too many raisins. People tend to cheat with raisins. And then he emphasized that the proper seasoning of salt really separates the average from the best of Irish soda breads. So taste for the proper seasoning of salt. I went on to learn that salt can be one of our best friends in the kitchen, as it plays a crucial role in the chemistry of a recipe. In bread baking, salt controls yeast growth and has a strengthening effect on the gluten in the dough. In pastry baking, it helps cut the oily mouthful of buttery doughs and encourages browning. But mostly salt is about making things more delicious. It is the key to waking up flavors, creating balance, and making desserts totally crave-worthy, giving everything that little edge that makes you feel to take one more bite. Well, since there were a dozen Irish soda breads, I took a lot of bites and woke up to the flavors and sensing the proper balance of salt. So with the food journalist's instructions in my mind, I learned that the significance of tasting for the right seasoning and the significance of every seasoning, especially the role that even a half teaspoon of salt can make. Now notice, today's gospel, Jesus uses salt as a powerful metaphor. Did you ever wonder what kind of baker his mother Mary was? I bet she was pretty good. And perhaps she gave Jesus this metaphor of the salt. Perhaps she was the inspiration behind today's words. Of course, in the culinary world of Mary and Jesus, people had no refrigeration, so they needed salt to preserve food. Salt was an important commodity. It was so valuable that it was even used as pay. Salt is the root of the word salary, salarium. Jesus used salt as a metaphor then to describe who his disciples should be and how they are to be apostolic in the world. Just as salt draws out the flavor of food, so too Jesus' disciples are to draw out goodness in the world. As salt, we may even have to upset at times the way things are and how life is ordinarily carried on. The usual taste of daily life in the world sometimes has lost its salt. So Jesus' listeners knew well what good and poor salt was, what it tasted like. His metaphor, then, was an effective one for his listeners, for they would well know when salt was lost in its flavor. And his comparison of salt losing its taste, losing faith, seems like a good one, not only for his disciples of then, but the disciples today. It seems, then, that we can learn from Jesus comparing faith to salt and challenge us to flavor our faith, season our spirits with the proper balance. Lately, I've been noticing in this parish the flavors of our faith with its many seasonings. Besides the magnificent ministries of our musicians and choir, our school, our religious education program, our sacramental ministries, our Ignatian spirituality retreats, today's readings draw special emphasis and attention to the role of our social justice programs. Indeed, not only do the gospel words about salt resonate, but also those profound words from the first reading. Thus says the Lord, share your bread with the hungry, shelter the oppressed and the homeless, clothe the naked when you see them, and do not turn your back on your own. Last Sunday, I attended a meeting with more than 40 parishioners about the status of the Muslim and Kurdish family from Syria, who through the Lutheran Social Service, our parish has agreed to support. As you will read in this week's bulletin, our social justice coordinator, Kate Trumbull, has organized an amazing team of parishioners over the last 5 months. Besides the 40 last week, I am told for the past several months, more than 200 of you have been involved in preparing for the arrival of our family. And more are coming. Our parish organizing has been truly amazing. There is the planning committee, as when they arrive, the housing committee for purchasing a residence, the transportation committee, how are they going to get back and forth, the school committee, which school will these their children attend. There was even, I kid you not, a diaper committee involving our grade school Girl Scouts, and our fourth graders have been writing letters to these children. This is the salt of the earth. This is the light that Jesus is talking about. However, a few days ago, it looked like that the entry would be denied for certain. Kate Trumbull provides that detailed account based on Wednesday's news in this Sunday's pastor's column of this situation up to Wednesday night. Then on Thursday evening, she spoke by means of a translator to Mr. Chacko, the father. She wrote about the conversation. He said they were very sad when they heard they would not be allowed into the United States after months of rigorous vetting. That they could have expected death, he said, but not this decision. He said that as believers of the same God, that they would trust in God and their friends in the United States to change this awful and dramatic situation. There was a lot of God's will, Kate said, in the conversation. Now, as you know, through court rulings, this situation has changed. And so this has our status of our Syrian family. It keeps changing. This morning, there was one message. And then an hour ago, I received another. The original plan, that the hope was that they would arrive on the night of February 6th at Dulles Airport and be met by Lutheran Social Services and a number of our parishioners, and then become acclimated through the generous labors of our Syrian Family Committee. then in collaboration with Lutheran Social Services. 1 hour ago, I received an email which stated, quote, initial word from the United Nations International Organization for Migration is that travel again for them and their Syrians will begin on February 17th. Visas will not expire, but families will be given an alternate booking number that it may be able to get them out sooner. But the backlog as a result of last week has delayed everything. The good news is that they don't have to wait in line again. So my brothers and sisters, there is hope that they will arrive this month. But allow me to introduce to you the members of this family so that you know how important they are to our parish. The father is named Amin Abdullah Chaiko. The mother, Jihan Suleiman Chaiko. The daughter, 13 years old, Suzanne Ahmad Chaiko. The son, 11-year-old, Renad Ahmad Chaiko. Another daughter, Miria Ahmad Chaiko, 10 years old. A 7-year-old daughter, Sivan Ahmad Chaiko. A son, Rizan Ahmad Chaiko. And last but not least, another son, Jawan Ahmad Abigodak Chaiko. This is our family who we have pledged to support. Tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, we will have a vigil service presided over by Father Leo Donovan, the former president of Georgetown University and the present director of Jesuit Refugee Service. Meanwhile, a group of our parishioners will be visiting on Tuesday the offices of congressmen and women on both sides of the aisle. All of these actions, my sisters and brothers, these dreams, these programs and prayer represent the seasoning of the Spirit, the flavoring of our faith. Truly, members of our parish, as American citizens, are representing the needs of these peoples. They're working with churches, synagogues, and mosques throughout our land and throughout the world, standing up for the oppressed, the poor, who have been rigorously vetted and have been processing using the legal process demanded on them for their entry. And so it seems that this national and international crisis of refugees, which Pope Francis so often talks about, offers us an opportunity where our faith is flavored, our spirits are seasoned, and that together, as Christians, Muslims, Jews, and the good people of other faiths, we are living out the words, share your bread with the hungry, shelter the oppressed and the homeless, clothe the naked, and when you see them, and do not turn your back on your own.